Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers, airing weeknights at 12:35, 11:35 Central on NBC, right after The Tonight Show.
Before Donald Trump even takes office, this week we are already witnessing the first major organized effort to resist the potential consequences of his presidency, specifically over his promise to repeal Obamacare. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. If you watched any of Trump's rallies during the campaign, you may have noticed that he didn't exactly have an in-depth plan in place for dealing with health care. In fact, all he ever really said about health care was this.
We don't win in any capacity with health care.
We're going to win with Obamacare. We're getting rid of it. We're repealing it, replacing it.
We're going to win with health care.
You're winning on health care. We're going to repeal that horrible stuff.
We are going to win on health care.
What does we're going to win on healthcare even mean? The only time I ever consider myself winning on healthcare is when the nurse calls me in before everyone else in the waiting room. Enjoy your six-month-old Golf Digest, losers. I'm getting a strep test. Now, Obamacare is in many ways a flawed, complicated system, but it's indisputable that millions of people currently depend on it. And yet, even without a clear plan in place, to reassure those people, Republicans have gone ahead and taken the first steps towards repealing Obamacare anyway. So amid all that uncertainty, Trump finally spoke out in a Washington Post interview over the weekend. He refused to divulge any specifics, but swore that he definitely has a plan, saying, quote, "It's very much formulated down to the final strokes." When asked what the plan would actually do, all he would say was, quote, "We're going to have insurance for everybody." Trump talks about policy like he's trying to get off the phone with someone. Yeah, no, health care, it's going to be great. For who? Everybody. Look, I'm going to let you go. Goodbye. But as for the details of how he'll pull that off, Trump said he is waiting for his nominee for Secretary of Health and Human Services, Georgia Congressman Tom Price, to be confirmed. And, of course, Trump's choice for health secretary is crucial because this is the guy who's going to go toe-to-toe with those pharmaceutical companies Trump has promised to take on. Surely, then, Price will have the best interests of the American people and not, say, his own bottom line at heart, right?
New revelations about Trump's pick for Secretary of Health and Human Services, Congressman Tom Price. CNN has learned that Price purchased shares in a medical device manufacturer days before introducing a bill that would have massively helped that company. The company's PAC subsequently then made multiple donations to Price's reelection campaign.
Well, it sounds like somebody's winning on health care. So we know some about Trump's pick for health secretary, but we still know very little about what kind of plan the GOP has in mind to reassure the millions of people who currently rely on Obamacare. Paul Ryan, one of Obamacare's harshest critics, held a town hall last week, and his first question came from a lifelong Republican who had a different take than Ryan's on the law.
I was a Republican, and I worked for the Reagan and Bush campaigns. Just like you, I was opposed to the Affordable Care Act. When it was passed, I told my wife we would close our business before I complied with this law. Then, at 49, I was given 6 weeks to live with a very curable type of cancer. We offered three times the cost of my treatments, which was rejected. They required an insurance card. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, I'm standing here today alive.
Look at Paul Ryan's face. That's the face the groom has when his best man is 20 minutes into a story about the time you hooked up with one of the Coors Light twins. To Ryan's credit, he dealt with the question politely, but Jeff had one last thing to say.
First of all, I'm glad you're standing here. I mean, really, seriously.
Can I say one thing? I hate to interrupt you.
Can I
say one thing? I want to thank President Obama from the bottom of my heart because I would be dead if it weren't for him.
So here's to the bride and groom, to love ever after, and twins! Now, Ryan answered that question by pointing out that premiums under Obamacare have been rising, and that's true. But overall, they've risen at a slower rate than they did before. And most people get subsidies to offset those increases. Republicans want to forget that the whole reason we have Obamacare in the first place is because healthcare sucked before. Sure, Obamacare isn't perfect, but it's better. Obamacare is like a fireman who carried you from a burning building, but on the way out, he banged your head into the doorframe. Sure, you have a headache now, but at least you're not on fire.
There's like a dull ringing.
And in addition to taking insurance away from millions, repealing Obamacare's taxes would also give the wealthiest Americans a huge tax cut. So why do Republicans continue to insist on moving forward with repeal without a clear plan to fix those problems first? Well, Georgia Congressman Drew Ferguson explained his support for repealing Obamacare before replacing it with this bizarre metaphor about a goat.
A little over 6 years ago, I lived in a pretty decent house, and one day I heard a knock on the door. And before I knew it, my colleagues from the other side of the aisle had let a goat loose in my house. Now, for 6 years, that goat has been messing in and destroying my house. I want to renovate my house, but before I can, I have to get the goat out of the house before it does any more damage. It makes no sense to start fixing up my house until we get the goat out.
What is life like in your district?
I'd like to get a new kitchen. Well, first you're going to have to get that goat out of your house.
It took you 6 years to get the goat out? Do goats have squatting rights? That story, of course, comes from the GOP children's book, The Goat Who Lost His Health Insurance. Also, quick side note, what's with Republicans and weird animal metaphors? Last month, Trump supporter Newt Gingrich added this to the canon.
Donald Trump is the grizzly bear in The Revenant. If you get his attention, he will get awake. When he gets awake, he will walk over, bite your face off, and sit on you.
That's right. Trump is the bear from The Revenant. And if they repeal Obamacare, the rest of us are going to be Leonardo DiCaprio sleeping inside that horse. So clearly, Republicans don't have a coherent plan for replacing Obamacare. But if that's the case, what are they busy doing?
You know, I actually do know what a dab is, okay? Just for the record. It's this, you know?
Oh, I see. Their plan is that nobody will need health care because we'll all be dead from embarrassment. Incidentally, Ryan was responding to a clip that went viral where he was seen telling the son of a congressman to stop dabbing during his father's swearing in. Ryan offered this explanation.
He wasn't doing a dab, by the way. It looked like he was sneezing. He was going like this.
So you took issue with his technique.
His technique, and I thought he was sneezing.
I thought he was sneezing, so I told him, better go see a doctor now before I take away your health insurance. Don't let that get worse. Now, there is one other crucial thing we know about repealing Obamacare. In addition to cutting taxes for the wealthy and taking health insurance away from millions, repeal would also result in major cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. And that's something Trump specifically promised he would not do during the campaign, tweeting, "I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid." Bernie Sanders, in particular, has promised to hold Trump to that pledge, which led to this amazing image of Sanders speaking on the Senate floor with a giant printout of a Donald Trump tweet on an easel next to them. And let's all just spare a thought for the poor congressional intern who had to go to Kinko's and print out a giant Donald Trump tweet.
And don't spend extra on that glossy paper. It's a ripoff. Bernie Sanders is not glossy. I'm Matt. I do very fine as Matt.
But Democrats haven't limited themselves to printing out tweets. Over the weekend, Democrats and progressive groups held rallies across the country in opposition to repealing Obamacare, including in Michigan, where there was a massive crowd to watch Bernie Sanders speak. Although maybe they were just excited to see which tweets Bernie would bring with him this time.
I'm doing this whole speech as a GIF.
That kind of on-ground organizing is what will stop Trump. Obamacare is not perfect, but millions depend on it. Otherwise, if Republicans win, we're going to see a lot more of this.
I actually do know what a dab is, okay? Just for the record. It's this.
This has been a closer look.
The Late Night Podcast is available every Wednesday and Friday on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please take a moment to leave us a rating and review. Now, back to the show.
Our first guest tonight is CNN's chief Washington correspondent. He hosts The Lead weekday afternoons on CNN, as well as the network Sunday show State of the Union. Please welcome back to the show our friend Jake Tapper. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
I'm so happy you had the day off and you were kind enough to come up here from D.C. to spend the day with us.
Yeah, not much going on.
Yeah, not much going on. Slow
take a day off.
Slow news year.
Not much to cover.
You had a big story. CNN broke a big story last Tuesday.
We did.
About how you basically reported that President-elect Trump had been presented with information that there was that Russia allegedly had information.
Yeah.
That they were going to use to blackmail him.
Yeah. About 9-10 days ago, the intelligence chiefs met with President Obama. The next day, they met with President-elect Trump, and they provided the intelligence briefing on the Russian hacking, and then they also provided this two-page synopsis of this other stuff that they'd been hearing from credible sources, but they didn't know if the information was real, and they wanted him to know about it, that it was out there, because they thought it potentially affected national security. So we had this story. I have to say, you got the first on-the-record comment, other than Donald Trump's tweet, from Kellyanne Conway. You and obviously had been watching CNN right before the show.
As I do.
As you do.
You're the person who pumps me up.
you explained it great. You had all the details perfectly right. I wish I could say the same about everyone else who followed us in our reporting, but you were exactly
well,
on
it
target.
Was. Obviously very fortuitous timing that it happened right before we came out and talked to her about it. The interesting thing that happened is right after CNN broke their story, BuzzFeed approached the same story a different way, whereas they actually published this 35-page memo, which was all these alleged things. And it was pretty salacious, some details that comedy shows were really happy to read. But yet the next day was this news press conference, Donald Trump's first press conference as president-elect. And he sort of conflated what CNN did with what BuzzFeed did, and he was very hard on Jim Acosta, the CNN reporter who was at that press conference. I believe he said, you are fake news.
Yeah.
This must be a crazy time. You used to have that job. You used to be a White House reporter. Do you feel as though you're under attack being a member of the press right now?
Well, I've been yelled at by presidents and press secretaries before, but
and of all, and nonpartisan,
yeah,
all, everybody has been mad at you.
And everybody's been mad at me one way or another. It's sooner or later, it happens. But I've never seen the effort to delegitimize an organization for a story that you don't like that has been proven. By the way, I mean, just every word of the story that we reported last Tuesday has been proven correct. It's been corroborated in one way or another by the vice president, by the director of national intelligence. There's not one thing we got wrong. Mm-hmm. He was obviously trying to get us to stop focusing on the story and just to discredit all of us. And, you know, that's too bad. It's not a huge shock that he would try to do that. It's one of the reasons that I wasn't happy about BuzzFeed doing what it did, in addition to the fact that I thought it was irresponsible to put these uncorroborated rumors out there. I mean, that's not reporting, that's just publishing.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, you know, that comes with the territory.
Now, it must be interesting because it seemed to me watching CNN in the days after, CNN then, as well as BuzzFeed, were part of the story.
Yeah.
as somebody who does reports on the news, is it an uncomfortable time where you are also part of the news?
Yeah, it's not really what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to be part of the story. And in fact, some of the lessons I've learned along the way in terms of being a reporter, especially in terms of being an aggressive one, have been about learning how not to be part of the story. Like, if you're going to ask a follow-up question 8, 9, 24 times, then you do so in a way that is polite so that you are not the story. The question and the refusal to answer is the story.
And, you know, I think there's this idea now, is the press going to have to sort of, like, work as one unit to combat what seems to be the strategy that the Trump administration is going to use with dealing with the press? Is it feasible to think of the press with all their disparate ideas and all the different ways they approach reporting on the news can actually work as one? Or is that sort of fanciful?
Well, it's a little fanciful because we compete against each other. But by the same token, if a reporter asks a legitimate question and doesn't get an answer, and then the press secretary or the president, whomever, calls on someone else to try to change the subject, which happens all the time.
Sure.
I remember when I was the White House correspondent for ABC News, and President Obama did that. He didn't answer somebody's question. He called on me. I said, well, I have a question, but can you answer Bennett's question first? I'd love it if you answered that. And he said, what are you, the ombudsman of the press corps?
We're definitely going to miss having a president who used ombudsman as a burn.
You don't see that coming on Twitter anytime yeah. soon.
What's that word? No, never mind. I'm going to go with dummy.
It was a sick burn. You're right. Yeah. It was a sick Obama burn. Ombudsman. But I mean, I think there does need to be some of that.
Well, there was this idea of after Trump yelled at Acosta, everybody should have gotten up and left. But, of course, everybody's not going to get up and leave.
No.
You're going to all get up and leave, and then the guy from Private Jet Magazine is going to be the last guy there asking all the questions, and he's going to get exactly the message he wants to get out.
Or Trump Magazine.
Or Trump Magazine.
I think there was a Trump Magazine.
There was
a
Trump Magazine.
Well, look, this is one of the things that happened during the first Obama term and I'm not saying these things are equivalent. But the Obama White House went to war against Fox News, and they tried to say that the entire organization was illegitimate. And it wasn't, this anchor is a jerk or this story is a lie or whatever. It was this entire organization, including hundreds of reporters and producers who were just doing honest work. People I knew, Major Garrett, Brett Baer, people who were good reporters. And when they were doing that, I challenged them for that, specifically because it's an important principle to stand up for. We're all supposed to be in this together, and you can't just, like, say, well, CNN, if you're with an organization that's not CNN and you watch them just destroy us or try to destroy us just because they don't like the story, which is, again, proven to be completely true, then you're next.
Yeah.
You're next if you're doing your job and you have a story that they don't like.
I want to talk about your roots. I did not realize this, that you were a newspaper man first. So what age are you when you start your first newspaper? Because this is impressive.
I was maybe six.
6 years old?
I was six.
And what was the name of your newspaper?
We had a naming contest in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And it was called, I didn't come up with, it was JT's If You Please.
JT's If You Please.
Yeah.
And this was the neighborhood? So you wrote a newspaper for other, like, the people in your street?
It was probably about five houses.
Five houses. And give me a story that JT's As You Please could...
Brian Brownholtz skinned his knee. Wasn't a lot going on in our courtyard.
Yeah. But you were at it early.
The Heilmans got a new Basenji.
Okay, gotcha. I've heard about that. I heard it's fake news. Everything you said. I want to ask one last thing, because I was in your office. We did our show in D.C., and we got down to your office, and you have all these campaign posters on your wall, but there's something in common with every poster you have.
They are the losing candidate.
Every single one.
It's a losing candidate in every single race. Even there are, if you look closely, you can see there is a Ronald Reagan poster, but it's years that he lost.
Okay,
gotcha.
68
and 76, the Nixon poster from 60. Yeah, I collect the people who did not win.
And your staff told me it's because you like to say only one winner is allowed in this office.
That's good.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you can use it.
That's not the reason, but I'm stealing that.
There you go.
That's great.
Always a pleasure to see you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Jake Tapper, everybody.
Thank you.
The Leaders, weekday afternoons at CNN, the State of the Union, on Sundays. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Henry from Late Night. Jake Tapper just finished his interview with Seth. I'm backstage with him now, and I'm going to ask him a couple more questions. Jake, you just taped your interview, and today is actually your day off, but you're still kind of working. Do you ever actually take a day off?
I try to. I do try to take days off. I have a 7-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl and a lovely wife. And I do try to take time off. But By the same token, everyone recognizes this is a busy time and it's important for journalists to be working. So it's more like I add them all up and then you don't see me for a week or two. You know what I mean? Than the regular kind of thing.
How often a day when you're on a day off are you checking your phone?
It's a really good question because I just made a New Year's resolution to my family that I would try to leave my phone in my bedroom and leave it there and not check it. So I do not have the willpower to not look at it if it's around. So I now have to have a restraining order against my own phone. And but it has worked out okay. It has worked out okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, Jake. Okay. Enjoy the rest of your day off.
Thank you so much.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.